in. Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk! What a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance. Great save by Markstrom.
Here's Kachuk. Oh, what a save by Demko.
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Tuesday? I'm Scott Rintoul. This is normally where I introduce Karen Sermon, but we live in an age of technology where that is not possible today, at least at this time. And when I can introduce her, I will, because she's going to be a very big part of this conversation today. One that we want to have with you. 960, 960, or 650, 650. Those are your textinations. We're going to make your day better. It's what we do each and every day. When I say we, yes, that will eventually include Karen once we get the bugs worked out on this show. Until that time, you got me, I've got you. Let's get after it. 24 hours ago, Karen and I knew one thing. We knew that today's show had the potential to be about the topic that we asked you about yesterday, the concept of a playoff race in the North Division. We had a poll question. It was fairly balanced. Many of you thought there was one. Here's the current status of that topic. Greg, do we have the current status of that topic? I suppose we do not. That tells me everything I need to know about the way things are going right now. The Canucks did not get their job done. More importantly, for the playoff race, the Flames did not get their job done. So here is the status, one more time, as I call for the status of the North Division playoff race. You don't have it.
I don't have it, Scotty.
You told me before the show you'd have it. We will play it later in the show. I had this great little bit off the top of the show. It didn't work, but technology is failing us here today. So I have failed you, and we will move on. Bottom line, they didn't get the results they needed last night, and so the playoff race has fallen flat on its ear if you thought there was one. It's why I was hesitant yesterday to say, yep, we got a playoff race in the North Division. It's why... There it is. There's the sad trombone. That's what I was waiting for. That is the sound of the playoff race in the North Division. We're off to a hell of a start here today, ladies and gentlemen. We're in that time of year where for the Flames, for the Canucks, the last couple of weeks, three wins feel like one, one loss feels like three, and that's where you're left today. So instead of doing that off the top of the show, I want to go another direction. I want to talk about something that's a little more enjoyable off the top. And we will get to the Canucks, and we will get to the Flames, and we will get to the Habs and the Jets and the funk that they find themselves in. But the talk of the hockey world once again this morning is the guy who's been the talk of the hockey world most of this season. That guy is Connor McDavid.
Here's McDavid hitting a trailing Barry. His shot deflected and then backhanded home by Connor McDavid. 2-0 Oilers, 26 for Connor McDavid. Stretch play, McDavid back late as Pionk. McDavid a shot, scores! Beat Hellebuck, low glove. He's got two tonight, 27 on the year. And McDavid's got a breakaway for a hat trick. He's in on net, he shoots and scores! Connor McDavid, hat trick!
Three goals, one assist, another four-point night for Connor McDavid, and he is dominating the scoring race. He's dominating the Hart Trophy conversation. None of that is new, but he just keeps adding to it. That's three consecutive games of 3 points or more. That's 10 points in his last three games. He hasn't played that often lately, but when he does, boy, does Connor McDavid deliver. And here's where we want to go with this, because the obvious statement of the day is Connor McDavid's the most exciting player in hockey. There aren't many who are going to argue with that concept here today. Now, Nathan MacKinnon is in the same conversation, and we have seen the ebb and flow of this. When MacKinnon gets on a heater, especially in years prior to this one, where you're watching more hockey, you're consuming the Avs more than you are this season, there are people that will make the point at times, well, maybe MacKinnon's more exciting than Connor McDavid. It's a tough case to make, but you can make it if you want. Artemi Panarin belongs on that podium. He's in that same conversation as well. And you might add a couple of other players around the fringes. But Connor McDavid is the most exciting player in hockey. I'm not breaking new ground by saying that. Where does he rank across sports? This is the more interesting conversation to me. It's the more interesting conversation to Karen. And once we get her in on this conversation, I will have her make her case. She will have me make my case. And I want you to make your case. 960, 960, 650, 650. You can answer Connor McDavid, and I can't tell you you're wrong right now. Because this is the type of topic that does not have one right answer. This is how vehemently are you going to argue? How stubborn are you in your stance? Are you going to stick to it? How many points are you going to concede along the way? If we take Connor McDavid as the most exciting player in hockey and say, all right, we all agree on that, or at least most of us agree, how does he compare to some of the athletes in other sports? Where does he compare to some of those athletes in basketball, in football? You want to go to soccer? Go ahead. Baseball is an interesting point of conversation today because of what Fernando Tatis Jr. did over the course of the weekend. What Shohei Ohtani did last night and has done over the course of the past few days and the Babe Ruth comparisons and doing things that we haven't seen in 100 years in a sport that has been around team-wise longer than any of the others that we generally talk about on these stations. Mookie Betts, Juan Soto. You want to get them into the conversation. We go to the National Football League. One of the things that will become clear in this conversation, as I have it with you, you have it with us, and Karen jumps in on it at some point in time here once technology gets worked out. Best doesn't always mean exciting. Now, in the case of McDavid, it might. There's virtually no one right now who will argue that McDavid isn't the best player in hockey, at least for this season. He doesn't win it every single year as far as a Hart Trophy goes. He didn't win it last year. But what he's doing right now is pretty ridiculous. Consider how excited we got about Nikita Kucherov 2 years ago. And man, could he take a run at 130 points, and he got damn close. He got 128. He won the Hart Trophy in a landslide, and he had an incredible season. Leon Draisaitl was going to take a run at that same number last year. Draisaitl was on virtually the same pace when the season hit pause. Kucherov was a 1.55 points per game player, and he nearly got to 130. Draisaitl was 1.56. They were virtually identical. Just to put that in perspective, McDavid is 1.78 right now. McDavid would be taking a run at 140. And yeah, the points are more difficult to get as the season goes on, but put it in context with the pace that we are talking about. If McDavid gets 6 more points this year and then shuts her down and says, you know what, I don't feel like playing anymore, or I'm just going to let other guys do stuff, I'm going to focus on defense. If he gets 6 more points this year in his final 10 games, Connor McDavid will have the same point-per-game pace as Draisaitl had last year in running away with the scoring race and Kucherov had the year before. That's how far ahead he is. And I think we're all excited to see what the chase for 100 looks like. Does he get there? How much do the Vancouver Canucks have to do with it because he plays them 5 times? He's got a couple of games against the Flames mixed in there as well. The chase for 100 is a really real thing for Connor McDavid. Now, how does he compare to athletes across sports? I tossed out some of the names in baseball. You start to look at football. Patrick Mahomes is the first name that comes to mind in football because he is the best player in the NFL right now. I know he didn't win the MVP award last year. I know that's an Aaron Rodgers award last season. But Mahomes is generally regarded as the best player in football. I don't think he's the most exciting. He does exciting things, but is he the most exciting player in his sport? And in football, maybe more than any other North American sport we can talk about right now, the field to me is the widest. Now, Mahomes is in the conversation, but he's probably not winning most people's debate. He's the best, but he's not the most exciting. Lamar Jackson might be the most exciting still. He's not near the quarterback that Mahomes is right now, but Lamar Jackson might be the most exciting with the explosiveness of what he does, with the way he makes the fastest players on a football field on the planet look like they are statues on a week-in, week-out basis. Kyler Murray's in the conversation. He does it differently than Lamar Jackson. Kyler does it with more lateral movement and quick steps as opposed to the explosiveness that Lamar goes down the field with. And he can throw it, and he can run it, and he might do both on the exact same play. He might make a bunch of guys miss and then throw a dime downfield that DeAndre Hopkins hauls in for a touchdown. Deshaun Watson despite what we have talked about with Deshaun Watson for the last number of months, and deservedly so, because that is far more important than his exploits on the field, in the context of a sporting conversation, Deshaun Watson qualifies. Josh Allen qualifies. You can make a pretty good case for Josh Allen being the most exciting player in the NFL. Doesn't mean he's the best, but he's exciting. Tyreek Hill, but doesn't touch the ball as much as those other guys. How about Christian McCaffrey? Alvin Kamara? These are all options, and there might be more. Maybe you're a Saquon Barkley fan. I know he's lost some luster because of the injuries over the last couple of years. And then there's basketball to consider. Steph Curry goes about it in a far different way than Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson's that explosive, get to the rim, throw it down with the type of power and size that you just don't see most times in the NBA. Steph Curry shoots from everywhere. And that's a different kind of exciting. What's more exciting to you? Ja Morant, to me, needs to be in the conversation. He's nowhere near the best player in the NBA. But the young guard of the Memphis Grizzlies, oh, he's exciting all right. He makes you come out of your seat at some point during the course of the game. Luka Doncic also factors into this conversation, and you've heard me make this comparison before. Doncic, to me, is kind of like what Mahomes is. Like, Doncic might end up being the best player. He's not explosive in the way that Zion is. He does things more unorthodox, and he has that playground meets exceptional skill level meld that you just don't see with most athletes, and Mahomes has that as well. Is Doncic the most exciting for you? I've given you a bunch. I haven't even gone to the world of soccer. I'm getting a lot of replies online. I want you to fill up the text message inbox with these as well. 650, 650. 650, 650. We're getting a lot of reaction. We'll get it throughout the show, and we're going to build this into a theme around the show today. Who is the most exciting athlete in team sports right now? This one comes in. Within sport, comparisons are legit. Brett Favre was always exciting, not always the best. That comes from John in Vancouver. John doesn't like the comparison between baseball and hockey, for example. John says, how can you compare the excitement levels of a guy on skates at 40 kilometers per hour versus a guy who takes a couple of low pitches and then hits one out? That's from John in Vancouver. Hey, you might feel the exact same way. John, I can tell you from my timeline on Twitter, because I put this question out just before the show. We do this sometimes. You want to follow me at Scott Rintoul on Twitter. You can follow Karen at Karen underscore Sermon, though she's unable to participate in the program so far. She's able to participate on Twitter, and she has already. If you want to follow any of us, you want to interact with us there, you can do that. I've got a lot of baseball replies coming in. They're not all Connor McDavid gifts. I can tell you that right now. This one comes in. Darren from Sundry says, Mika Zibanejad is more exciting given his origins and being underrated in Ottawa. McDavid has always been McDavid, tops in the world, no dispute, but players that have seen huge growth from mediocrity to stardom over the course of their careers are more exciting to watch in my mind. It's an interesting spin, Darren. I would not argue that Zibanejad's the most exciting player on his team, in fact. I would argue that Panarin is more exciting, but this is what I like about this conversation. Exciting means something a little bit different to everybody. What does it mean to you? And who is the most exciting athlete right now in sports? I'd bring Jamie into this conversation, but Jamie is unable to connect with us as well via technology. Greg Ballack may want to weigh in. Someone says, welcome to the Daily McDaily, the Daily McDavid, that's tough to say actually, Daily McDavid whatever fest, rinse and repeat. He's doing things that we haven't seen in a really, really long time. In fact, scoring pace-wise, he's doing something we haven't seen since Mario Lemieux right now. I don't know if he can keep it up until the end of the season, unsigned texter, but there's a reason people keep talking about him. Because even though he puts up a three-point effort against the Habs and another three-point effort against the Habs, he comes out last night and makes the Jets look silly. He's doing it in a bunch of different ways, and he is clearly a front runner from the Hart Trophy. It's not even close. Dave, don't drive. Dave says he's nine shots deep because he's having a drink every time I say conversation, and we're only in the first segment. I just said it again, Dave. Again, I hope somebody has your keys. David Langley says the most exciting athlete in sports right now is definitely Steph Curry. Every game is ridiculous. It reminds you of 2006 Kobe Bryant, where anything could happen on any given night. He's got to be in the conversation, Dave. I agree with you. When you start to go across sports, it gets really difficult. You start to talk about the context of the sports, how much of it has to do with explosiveness. The factor you mentioned, Dave, is a really good one. That factor of, is this person going to show me something tonight that I've never seen before in my life? And is that person going to do something? I mean, we talk about draws in sports. Like, who is the best draw? Like, this is part of the same conversation when we get into it here. 650-650-960-960. I didn't have this guy, but someone has said Kyrie. His handle is the best we've ever seen. His vision, the ability to finish any layup is insane. Kyrie Irving's really exciting. I don't believe I'd put him in my most exciting in the NBA conversation, but you can say whoever you want. Karen Sermon is welcome to join the party now. Better late than never. Not your fault. Welcome to the conversation, Karen. Teeing up the topic that you and I were so excited about getting into here today.
Good morning, Scotty. Yeah, I was pretty fired up to start this show. I was ready, had some coffee in my system, and 16 minutes later, better late than never, Scotty. So here we are. Good old technology once again this morning. Can't do anything about it, but Scott, I'm ready to go. Your conversation already so far. I've been following the inbox. Lots of good write-in suggestions. A couple of players that I did not even think of. Again, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and we think of basketball. But Scott, I like the idea of who makes you get off your seat? Who makes you go wow every game? Who makes you think, I just saw something I haven't seen? And I'm thinking of a lot of players that I could go down the road and argue about and, you know, not even argue, and none of them are probably even wrong. But for me, it's McDavid does this because he gets you off your seat almost every night. Who else does that? That's what I'm thinking about with exciting player. That's why I was excited to have this conversation with you.
I do think that MacKinnon will factor into the conversation, and he would factor in more so, Karen, if we were watching more American hockey this year. And we'll talk to Mike MacKinnon about this and ask him if MacKinnon, Panarin, someone else in the National Hockey League is close. But because we're not seeing him as often, like MacKinnon and the Avs lost last night. They lost 4-1. But guess who scored the goal and extended his point streak to 14 games? But the volume of McDavid's production and the number of highlights per game right now that are being churned out of Edmonton versus these other North Division teams, it's overwhelming to a certain extent. And that's not McDavid's fault. And part of it has to do with our attention being focused on this Northern Division this year. That's just where we're at.
But like you said, Scott, there's something about what he's doing at the rate at what he's doing. I mean, I watched his goals last night, and they're all different capacity. You know, the first one was just a little bit of a tap in at the side of the net, but right place, right time. The second goal was that fake snap slap shot, a little cheeky goal past Connor Hellebuck. So, you know, a little creativity in his play there. And then you've got the third breakaway. It's the speed. It's the hands in close. There's just something every night. There's the behind the legs, no look pass to a Ryan Nugent Hopkins in the slot for a goal on the power play. Like, it's just something that you don't see from every other player. And when I think about when this crosses over to other sports, for me, Scott, and I know I heard you talk about the NFL, like for me, that's a Patrick Mahomes. For me, he's the most exciting player in the NFL for me because of what he can do game in and game out. And the fact that you're probably going to see something, Scott, in each game that you haven't seen before. So it's the quality of what he does things and the ingenuity at what he does things makes him the most exciting player for me in the NFL. I look at the NBA. I really wanted to go Luka Doncic. Like, for me, he's must-watch TV. Like, I love him. I think he is going to be – he is the future of the National Basketball League. But is he the most exciting player in the league, Scott? You can make an argument for it, but I think there's also a bigger argument to say Steph Curry still is. You know, so for me, it's just watching these players just do things that you just, you think you've seen it all until you watch their next game or their next shot. And that's McDavid to me. And that's Steph Curry to me. And that's Patrick Mahomes to me.
Patrick Mahomes is not the most exciting player in the NFL, though I think he's the best player in the NFL. I do. And I don't think he does something every single game that makes you go, oh my God, I've never seen that before. I think he does that sometimes. I think he does it in a different way. And you've heard me make the comparison between Doncic and Mahomes before. I think there is some shared DNA in the way they go about their business. And with both of them, sometimes you have to see the subtleties of their game, but that doesn't always jump off of the screen as most exciting. But we can debate this throughout the course of the show because there are some who agree with you on Patrick Mahomes. There are others who go, like, he's the best, but that doesn't mean he's the most exciting. And John texts in this morning, different John this time around, not sure where John hails from. Looks like it's an Edmonton area code, quite frankly. The difference between McDavid and all the other athletes right now is that McDavid is simultaneously the most exciting and the best player in his sport, says John.
And yeah, you could definitely, I don't even think that's an argument. Like, that's a perfect statement. He is right now heads and tails probably above anybody else in the NHL. And you just have to look at the stats, but you can look at watching him game in, game out. He's the best player on the ice every night and he finds a way to get it done. When you look at, like someone said here, I agree with Karen, it's who gets you off your seat. And for me, when I look at players that get me off my seat, and you know, you could argue in the NHL, a player that gets me off my seat as well is Alexander Ovechkin. Because again, there's probably something he's going to do most games that you're like, wow. But is it as consistent, Scott, as what McDavid is doing right now? It's more of a, because maybe he's older and we don't see him very much, you just don't see the highlights anymore, but he's someone that could get me off my seats. But is he the most exciting at everything that he does? Well, when he puts the goals in the net, yeah, he is. You know, when he celebrates, he makes it exciting for me. But is he the best player on, or the most exciting player on the ice night and night? Maybe he has that caliber against above him.
He was at one point. He's not right now, but he was at one point. At one point, Ovechkin was the most exciting player in the National Hockey League. And I think he's a good example of one of the things we're talking about. There were times he was the best player in the game, but if you compared he and Sidney Crosby most of the time, the majority of hockey people would say, okay, Crosby's the better overall player. Ovechkin's more exciting.
When you think about, Scott, when you think about the criteria for making most exciting player, one thing for me that strikes out too is the way they do it on the field. And I mean that in terms of they're having fun out there and watching them smile. And there's something about how they celebrate, and not in a bombastic, like making fun of you way or showing up their teammates, but everything that they do, they look like a kid again, you know, whether it's someone playing hoops with their buddies and they just made some ridiculous shot on a court in New York City, or someone who's playing backyard ice rink with their buddies and their dad and they do something and they're just excited. Like, for me, again, that adds to the quality of exciting players, someone who looks like they're just having so much fun doing what they do. And again, you could say that's Ovechkin at a time. He was like that when he scored. You could say Patrick Mahomes when he runs off the field after scoring a touchdown, Scott, the smile on his face is usually like he's having fun game in, game out. McDavid might be the opposite of that sometimes, because sometimes it's like, oh, how am I did it again. He'll get excited, more excited when his teammates score than he does, kind of like he's a little, okay, I know I'm good, I'm not gonna show it out there. But for me, I like to see players understand they're good but still have fun with it.
Well, if we wanted to use the baseball example, and we can talk whether baseball factors in, there's a lot of people who are down on the sport so they won't look at baseball players in this conversation. Tatis does it in an Ovechkin-like manner. Like, Fernando yeah. Tatis Jr., when he does stuff, and we saw great examples of it this weekend, he lets you know that he knows too, and he wants to be a showman about it. Shohei Ohtani doesn't do it that way.
Nope, he doesn't have that personality, no.
Like,
but he's
he
probably
doesn't,
the best player.
he doesn't have an outward showmanship to his game that a Tatis Jr. does. And again, what is exciting for you? I've had a lot of people say it's Shohei Ohtani. I haven't had a lot of people say Fernando Tatis Jr., but I've had a couple of people weigh in on that.
You know, when I think of most exciting player, though, Scott, in baseball, like I think of Mookie Betts, personally. Like someone who is not just doing it at the dish. Like you watch him in that NLCS last year against the Atlanta Braves, and what he had three game-changing catches, at least in that series. He has that one against Ozuna up against the wall. It's not going to be a home run, but if, you know, it drops in, it's going to be probably an extra bases hit for a double or a triple. And his excitement after catching that. Yeah, the magnitude of the game was huge, obviously, but just his ability to get to every ball in the outfield. I mean, he took that home run away from Freddie Freeman late in that NLCS. And again, it's just the ability to get up there and get the ball, the ability to make diving catches, his ability to run the bases, his ability to hit for slugging percentage. Like for me, I look at the one of the most exciting players in baseball and who I want to see live. For me, it's Mookie Betts.
We will get you in on this conversation throughout the morning, 960, 960, 650, 650. We have an Upper Deck starter kit to give away in each market as well, so we will start to give you clues when you think you know the answer. You can text in at any time during the course of the show. This will be a running theme, most exciting player in team sports right now. Who is it for you and why? We'll build your conversation pieces into our conversation. Yeah, I just wanted to make you drink a couple more times there, Dave. I know I can use different words. I've got synonyms for you, Dave. We'll use them throughout the course of the show today. Mike McKenna joins us next, as he does every week, Karen, and I want to ask him about what sets up right now is a major, major difference in the standings when you look at what's happening south of the border and what's happening north of the border, and I'll explain what that is next on Rental and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
Go ahead as you waste your days with thinking. When you fall, everyone says.
No winners yesterday when it came to the Flames or the Canucks. We'll get into that more as the show continues. We're asking about the most exciting player in team sports right now. But we did make a couple of people winners yesterday, and we're going to do the same thing today, Karen.
Yes, absolutely. We gave away a Upper Deck starter kit, Scott, in both Calgary and Vancouver, 960, 960, 650, 650. Again, we're going to give you four clues throughout the show. You can text in at any time. You can text in multiple times if you think you got it wrong the first time. And our first question today is, he is a former 40-goal scorer in the WHL, Scott. He's a former goal scorer in the WHL. And what can they win again today?
So you can get yourself, if you win this prize back, and again, we will randomly draw, producer Jamie Dodd will randomly draw from both text message inboxes, and if you are chosen, you will win a trading card binder from Upper Deck, three packs of 2021 Upper Deck Series 1 cards, an exclusive Sophomore Sensations card, a poster, a trading card collector's guide as well. And the first clue, as you said, Karen, he is a former
40-goal scorer in the WHL.
So
not in the NHL, in the WHL.
It's a very vague clue. That's how this works. You can hazard a guess if you like, and we are talking about active players in the NHL. That is the first clue of the day. More to come. You can text in at any time. You will not be disqualified if you have an incorrect answer. You just have to have the correct answer at one point in time. Mike McKenna is going to join us here. I said before the break, there's something that's happening in the American divisions with playoff teams mm-hmm. that's not happening in the Canadian division. And I want to get Mike McKenna's take on this and much more. When you look at the Canadian division standings versus the U.S. divisions, and this isn't me saying, the Canadian division sucks. I know some people have made that argument. Home ice advantage. You go look at the majority of teams in U.S. divisions, they have incredible home ice advantages. Incredible. Like the Toronto Maple Leafs have the best home record in Canada right now, and it's the 11th best home record in the National Hockey League. Is that simply because there are a few fans in some of these buildings and now across the United States there are fans in these buildings? Is it more than that? Is it the attention that gets paid to all of the games in Canada and it feels like every single one is bigger? I don't know. We'll ask Mike about that, our weekly Tuesday regular. Mike McKenna, former NHL goaltender, current analyst with the Vegas Golden Knights, joins us now. Karen, Mike, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Karen? Scott, always good talking with you.
Yeah, and welcome back. It's nice to do this every single Tuesday. Although I saw you tweet today, and I'm not sure you're off to a great start on this Tuesday. You're talking about how you might be the only goaltender in the history of the Milwaukee Admirals to have only one save on his resume with the franchise.
It's been confirmed. Yep. It started with kind of dabbling back and forth with the Admirals here. Probably going to be speaking with them on a podcast next week sometime. And it just crossed my mind. I played one game for the Milwaukee Admirals. I made one save on four shots and I got the hook. And I can remember every single goal. I had one go off a defenseman's backside in the net. Another one was from behind the goal line off another player in front. And then I got beat by a one-timer clean on a 5-on-3, and I was gone. It was my one start, and I can remember walking out of the building. Mind you, I was on a PTO, a professional tryout agreement in the American League. I'd been in the ECHL, and I'm trying my hardest to make the American Hockey League, so maybe someday I can make the NHL. And well, 1-for-4. and I lasted, I think, like 12 minutes, and it's just glaring on my stats for my career. And it's funny, though, because I look back and, like, in that moment, it was a low point in my career. I walked out of the building. I remember just breaking down. Like, I was in tears. I thought I was never going to get another chance in the American League. And then, I mean, I think I got sent down, and 4 days later, Omaha picked me up for a month and a half. And the next year, I was in that league full time. So, you know, you learn from it, you move on, but I mean, what a funny story. I am literally the worst goalie to ever put on a Milwaukee Admirals jersey.
I'm not sure they'd say that, but maybe you guys can sort that out on the podcast. I mentioned the home ice advantage thing going on in the American Division right now. Like, the team you cover most often is the Vegas Golden Knights. They're 18-4-2 in their own arena, and that's not a stat that jumps out compared to other top American teams. Like, they all seem to have that great home ice advantage. What actual home ice advantage exists, because you're in those arenas and we're not?
I just think players feel comfortable. It's a lot easier. It's so much easier to have fun when you're comfortable. You know, you're at home, you've got the creature comforts of, at least whether you have a family or you have a dog or a cat or anything, you know, you can drive somewhere. And it's amazing how cathartic it can even be to just get in a car and go, compared to what you're doing on the road. The players are all stir crazy. You can only play so many video games. You can only watch so much TV on Netflix. They don't even hardly have interaction with their teammates. You know, it's all done via iPad until you get to the rink and virtual meetings. And I'm a huge subscriber that if you're happy, you're playing your best. And especially in America, where a lot of the buildings at this point, even in California, they have fans in the stands. That's another added bonus. There's juice to that. You want to play well for them. You can feel that emotional wave when you score a goal, that they're behind you, and you get some excitement and energy and momentum from it. And obviously, that's not the case in Canada right now. It's just different. And it's going to be really interesting to me when we get down the road in playoffs, how that dynamic plays out, because it was, as we know, someone's coming out of the North and they're going to play against American teams based in America in short order. And it'll be fascinating to see how that plays.
Mike, when it comes to looking at the Canadian division and why there isn't so much home ice advantage, do you think you can point to maybe one thing, or is it a combination of a few things, like travel, all eyes of Canada, like hockey being the number one sport, all eyes are on every game, every single game? Is it the fact that there is no fans? Do you think it's a combination of them, or do you point to one over the other?
I think it's more fans. And, you know, I don't think that there's the enhanced magnification aspect as much as people may think. And, mm-hmm. you know, we'll stand on stage and say that every game's just, it's huge. And really every game has the same meaning. They really do. Like, 2 points are up for every single game, whether it's October, or in this case, January, or whether it's April, those all play the same way at the end of the season. So I don't think the players feel that. It's go out and take care of business. But, you know, having the fans in the building makes it feel real. It makes mm-hmm. you feel like you're an NHL hockey player. And you talk to any of the players behind the scenes, and they still think it feels like exhibition games without fans there, even though they've been doing this at this point for, you know, well over a year now, almost, if you factor in the bubble. It still doesn't feel right. So a home ice advantage just doesn't feel like it when you don't have your fans in the stands. And I do think the travel aspect is real. That is a little bit harder, but it's just a different animal. You know, honestly, in the States right now, the players say it's starting to feel like NHL hockey again. And I think that's the biggest factor.
Mike, in normal times, like pre-COVID, let's say, or when we get back to after COVID, we know Vegas is a destination to go to, where the excitement in the arena is there. We know what it's like for players to play at MSG, or, you know, in the Bell Center, or the old arena in Montreal, or whatever it is. But when you look at all the arenas that you've played in, can you point to one and go, that was awesome to play in?
Yeah, Montreal was, for sure. I think just the aspect of playing in a place that's so steeped in history, and the buzz of the building. It's impossible to describe it unless you've been in there, and especially from a player's standpoint. It's just different, you know, and every place in the United States has a different feel. Philly is insane, and they yell at their own players as much as the opposing players. You know, I mean, Washington's a place I never realized Washington would be so hard to play in. And it's so difficult, you know, and Vegas is a fun building, and it's a different kind of intensity. But Montreal really took it for me. And like, in terms of home ice advantage for teams I played for, even in the minors, I mean, geez, Syracuse, we just never lost at home. And it was palpable, you know, this tiny old barn, they filmed Slapshot in it. The fans are right on top of you. We knew that if we were in our building, we were going to win. It just, you had that feeling. And you could sense that with the Vegas Golden Knights as well. Like, they think that they're going to win every single game on home ice. It's not even a question. So, you know, for those teams that have that feeling, to me, it's a real advantage.
It's one of the great things we've seen in recent years, in my estimation. Places like Vegas, places like Nashville, they've created a different atmosphere than in some of what have become cookie-cutter buildings around the National Hockey League. Mike McKenna joining
us.
And
like hyper-localized, you know, Scott. Like, it's, they really take what is the essence of the city, like Nashville and Vegas. Like, you can feel those cities bleeding into the atmosphere in those arenas.
Yes, absolutely, Mike. And it's one of the things that I think Seattle's going to expand on. And I think traditional teams should try to emulate to a certain degree. Don't try to be Vegas in Vancouver or Vegas in Calgary, but use what makes you distinct so that a game in Vancouver feels different than a game in Edmonton or Winnipeg or whatever.
Yes, you're forward thinking, Scott. I love it. I mean, like, think about how many unique things exist in every city, whether we're talking about music or food or culture. Every city has it. I can't buy this argument that there's a city in the National Hockey League that doesn't have its own flavor or culture to it. Why aren't we tapping into that? Why aren't we having fun? You know, we're just so conservative in hockey sometimes that the hockey speaks for itself and it should sell the game. And like, man, people want to be entertained, you know, like people spend good money to go to a game, to be able to yell at somebody, to be able to release. And they just want entertainment, man. And I think in today's society, like the product on the ice is great. It's the best it's ever been, but you need more. You have to differentiate yourself. You have to go into the game and walk out of there saying, man, I had a great time. And it almost doesn't even, like, you want your team to win, that'll make it better. But even if they don't win, you still want to have a great time, you know? And that's what all that ancillary stuff can provide.
Well, and this is what McDavid provides for Oilers fans and for any building he goes into. But there's only one of him. We're having that discussion today about most exciting players in sports. McDavid's at the top of the list in the NHL right now. How close, in your mind, are MacKinnon and or Panarin to him as far as excitement goes?
I mean, like, MacKinnon is just so explosive. When the puck's on his stick, you know something can happen and he can dominate a play. But and Panarin too, you know, like, and just watching how he makes everybody around him that much better. But I don't know if you can compete with McDavid. I mean, just the combination of skill sets he has, that breakaway he had on Connor Hellebuck last night, he's stick handling from the blue line with his head up. The puck's moving 1,000 miles an hour and he's not even looking at it. Forehand, back in fact, top shelf goal, you know, like, how can we, normal humans can't do that. And that's electrifying, is to see, that's why we watch sports. We watch sports to see something happen in front of us that we can't do, that we can't believe we've just seen. And as good of players as MacKinnon and Panarin are, they don't have as many of those just unbelievable highlight reel type of plays. And I love those players. You know, I think that, I really think McDavid's in a class of himself, and really it just comes down to how well he skates with the puck. You know, watching him go through the neutral zone and break into the offensive zone and combine that with his creativity is it's otherworldly. It's unbelievable to watch.
Mike, we know how big the McDavid star power here is north of the border for us. You've got the new TV package coming down. Of course, the second part of that was announced today, confirmed, but ESPN is going to be a big part of this. Can it expand his star power in the United States across more mainstream sports fans?
I think we all hope so. And it'll be interesting because they have such a good asset in Connor McDavid to be able to sell. And there's other people that do, but he's going to have to come out of his shell. I don't know anything about Connor McDavid away from what he is on the ice. And I don't mean that in a negative light whatsoever. I think that die was cast a long time ago by Sidney Crosby, who's been such a good spokesman for the league in so many ways. But frankly, I don't know much about Sidney Crosby. I know he's a hockey player, you know, and I hear all the stories of him behind the scenes doing great stuff and being a great friend and great teammate. But we have a tendency to suppress our biggest stars. We don't let them shine, or we don't encourage them to shine. We don't let their personalities and their interests come through. And if we're depending on them to, you know, if the only avenue we have is a glimpse into their lives is a 20-minute interview on Spit and Chicklets where they keep everything internal and don't really let anything fly, we're selling ourselves short. You know, we need to know their interests. We need to know what makes them tick. So for McDavid to really expand, or anybody else, ESPN's done that very well in the past. They have put players in a position to let them shine. So we'll see if that happens. I certainly hope so. But I think it's really going to come down to the players, how much they're willing to let themselves at times even be vulnerable and just have fun on TV.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the, if there is any criticism of Connor McDavid, is just we don't know anything other than what he does on the ice. So hopefully ESPN can bring some of his personality out with some of those commercials they can do with him. Let's look at what Connor Hellebuck's been doing as of late. We saw what McDavid did to him last night, but this is kind of the third game in a row. He's been pulled twice in his last three games, 53 saves on 65 shots, so an .815 save percentage. Should Jets fans start to be a little worried?
I'm worried because I watch his games, and it's very hard to project this because I was a goaltender who loved to play a lot of minutes. I wanted to play every single game if I possibly could, and I rode that. I always played better, and Hellebuck has largely done that during his career. But you got to look at who they're going to play against. Like, if you want to get out of the North Division, you have to beat Connor McDavid. McDavid scores a hat trick. You can't stop him. You look at Austin Matthews, who's done well against Hellebuck this year as well. These are players that you're going to have to face. And in the last several games, to me, you know, I would have never said Connor Hellebuck's a great goalie skater. He's a very positionally sound goaltender. He reads the puck pretty well. But his skating has always been the one area where there could be some improvement. And I don't see him arriving set on time. I don't see him fighting to get on angle as quickly as he has previously. And to me, that indicates somebody who maybe is starting to feel the effects of leading the league in games played. You know, he's played 39 games. He's leading. And nobody else has done anything close to that right now except for Vasilevsky, Markstrom, Binnington. And none of those guys are at the top of the save percentage except for Vasilevsky and then Grubauer a little bit lower. So I'm a little concerned with that. I think there's some runway here for sure. And Hellebuck's had great stretches during the season. If he can get his skating back to the level it needs to be, that he's arriving early, getting his feet set so that he can trust in his best instincts, his reads, I think he'll be fine. But there is some concern because you've got to beat McDavid. You got to beat Matthews. And as of late, at least, those guys seem to have his number.
Mike McKenna joining us here as he does every Tuesday. So if you're Wade Flaherty and Paul Maurice, what does that conversation look like in terms of trying to get Connor Hellebuck rested and reset for the postseason?
Well, it's kind of late for that at this point. You know, you got, what, 10 games left, 12 games left across the board, and you still got to ride him. So I don't know if you want to throw off the rhythm of a goaltender who's always loved to play that many games. You know, I think you've kind of made your bed from the start of the season on when, you know, when you're not giving Brassois a whole lot of minutes, you can't expect him down the stretch to suddenly go play half the games. You know, that's just not the dynamic of that team. And on top of that, you want to throw your weight behind your guy. Hellebuck's the guy there, period. He's the number one. And the messaging doesn't look good if all of a sudden now Brassois is playing half or two or third or whatever it may be. I think it's just kind of dependent on Connor alone finding his game and Flaherty working along to make sure he's diligent about it before, after those off days, practices, trying to make sure that he's at his best come playoff time.
Okay, so the counter to that would be Winnipeg is virtually wrapped up a playoff spot. Calgary and Vancouver, the chances of Winnipeg getting caught by either of those teams is minuscule. So why isn't it more about, hey, we can alternate starts here. We've only got 8 games to go. This is about getting you in fine form, because the only thing that matters here, guys, now is the postseason.
Well, that's what I was kind of hinting at is, like, he loves to play. And he has been the guy, and it may throw your entire rhythm off and create doubt, you know, amongst the team, amongst yourself as a goaltender, because no matter what the messaging is, no matter what they tell you, hey, we're going to rotate. Well, if Hellebuck goes and has 5 bad games and Brassois knocks the doors down, now you got a huge problem on your hands, because whether the team believes it or not, you got a huge controversy. You guys know how it plays out in the media. Like, that's going to be a problem going ahead. So you want to throw your weight behind your number one guy going towards it. That's who they've made their bed with. He's got his contract. He's got, I mean, a Vezina on his resume very recently. It's about messaging. It's about making sure that Connor's in the best state of mind for him to be successful. And historically, that's always been when he's played a lot of games.
I don't know how closely you were watching the Vancouver Canucks goaltending situation, but I wondered if a smile came across your face when you saw what happened over the last 24 hours, because you were part of some switching that happened in Ottawa and which goalie are we going to use? And Thatcher Demko has a minor injury yesterday, but they've already sent Mikey DiPietro down to the farm, and now Artur Silovs is backing up for Braden Holtby last night. With DiPietro specifically, they've sent him down to Utica. They made that decision finally. I guess it falls into better late than never. How much can he get out of eight starts if that's what he ends up getting in the AHL this season?
A whole lot more than zero. That's what it comes down to. I mean, who knows if he'll get all eight? You know, there's other factors involved, but you got to play. And I think that the way that they looked at it in Vancouver was smart this year, that you've got somebody who can benefit from practicing with the team, but more importantly, practicing with Ian Clark. And you're seeing it with Holtby. Look at Holtby's last couple games. He's starting to hit his stride. You can feel a little bit of comfortability coming that, hey, man, like, you've gone to goalie school with Ian. You've learned what you need to do to be successful. You've learned how to get on that same wavelength. And, you know, for especially for DiPietro, it's time to translate that. You've gone to school. You've done your homework. It's been a full season, a full 3 months or whatever it's been of goalie school. Now you get to go show off. So I know it's a strange year. It's been tough on a lot of goaltenders, and especially with the border situation between Vancouver, Utica, it's not easy. But man, it's been a great opportunity for DiPietro to hone in his technical game. And now he gets to go have some fun, enjoy it. Just go play. You know, even if you don't win every game, if it doesn't even go great, at least you know that you've had a reason to go enjoy the game again and be able to show off what you've worked on all season long.
Mike, if I throw December 15th, 2018 at you, do you remember that day, that game? Do you remember?
December 15th, 2018 would have been, I was with the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
And it was against probably the Philadelphia Flyers.
It was your one game at the Bell Center.
Oh, yeah,
that you were talking about. Yes, Gregory Ballack was throwing it this way. You stopped 42 of 46 in your one game at the Bell Center. I'm not going to talk about the outcome of the game. You were playing against Carey Price, so that's a tough situation to go against.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was he threw that out there. 42 of 46, that's pretty impressive. Good job.
Yeah, I won't forget that one. That actually was on Hockey Night in Canada, and I should probably have the dates ingrained in my head for those things. And I just wanted that towel so bad. More than anything else, I wanted to be able to wear it afterwards. And yeah, we got absolutely bombarded. And I remember like holding the fort basically through two periods, and then the wheels fell off in the third. And in all honesty, though, it was one of my most memorable starts. It was fun to play in that building. It was fun to really perform. I mean, Carey at the other end, I think, had like 16 saves through a period and a half. Like, we were getting trounced, but we were still in the game, and I knew I was making a difference. But it just would have been really cool to get that win. And man, I remember during the broadcast, I can't remember who it was, but somebody was making the case for me to be nominated for the Masterton. my wife told me afterwards. And I remember like at the end of the season being kind of like, you know what? I think that actually had some validity to it, but I was in the minors, so nobody would nominate me. So that would have been really cool, though.
Did we figure out who's at the door? Is everything okay?
Yeah, that's my daughter just came home from a nursery date with my mom. They're going to pick out some beautiful petunias or azaleas or something. I don't know, but yeah, it's always an adventure in the McKenna household. Usually, it's the dog that goes crazy. This time, it's my daughter and my mom.
Hey, man, we're all used to it. Believe me, working from home, we had technical issues off the top of the show today. We get it. This is 2021,
it's
man.
Than the trash truck.
Buddy, we just roll also. With it. Oh, yeah, that one was a good one as well. Hey, Mike, we'll do this again next Tuesday. It's always a lot of fun. Thanks for jumping in on the conversation today.
Anytime. Garrett, Scott, always a pleasure. You guys have a good one.
Thanks,
that is Mike.
Mike
McKenna, Vegas Golden Knights analyst, and I got Dave and Cedar just one more shot this morning because he was worried we were going to use discussion instead of conversation, but Dave wanted to have a drink. So
I hope Dave's text in still in 3 hours time, Scott. We're going. He might need a little bit of a late morning nap. Scott, the one thing I would say against Mike, and he knows more than I do, but when it comes to the goalie position and playing, and you threw it out there in the counter to what Connor Hellebuyck is doing, like, they have 8 games in 17 days. So he's going to get some rest if that's what the situation is right now. But honestly, like, looking at where they are, they're going to finish second or third. So at this point, it's like to give Bressois a couple more starts down the stretch just to make sure Hellebuck is good to go. I don't think the perception, even if Bressois wins those games, would really change that much when it comes to Connor Hellebuck.
No, not when it comes to the reigning Vezina Trophy winner. He's going to be the guy to start the playoffs. Yeah. What gets him sharp? And Mike may have something because of how you laid it out. 8 games, 17 days. Like, he still might need to play the majority of those if that's what gets him right. But that's all that matters in Winnipeg right now, quite frankly. Get Nick Ehlers healthy. Try not to lose any of your other guys. Get your confidence back somehow, some way. But if they don't have that goalie going, as much as we've talked about how great that team sets up on paper and how deep all the – if he's not going, it doesn't matter.
And you might throw Laurent Brossoit out there tomorrow night against Edmonton one more time. Your final game against them, he shut them down in the third period. Again, you know, the Oilers already had the 6-1 lead, so it wasn't really much of a game at that point. They weren't really pressing as much. But maybe you give him that one, throw him a bone. Or, you know what, maybe you have to go back to Connor Hellebuyck to say to your guys, look, like, we're going to go back to our number one. But if Brossoit was to start this game on Wednesday, I would not be surprised at all.
We do not have a correct answer as of yet in either text message inbox, which means you're going to need at least one more clue, and those will come throughout the course of the day for our Upper Deck giveaway. It's Rintoul and Sermon. We've ripped them a lot. We've pointed out a lot of their flaws, but there's one thing they have done, and they did it again last night. Who are we talking about? Find out next on Rintoul and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
We've spent a lot of time talking about what they have not done. A lot of time. And we're not the only ones. I think most people have had that conversation, especially with where we were yesterday. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. They are not the Calgary Flames. They are not the Vancouver Canucks, though those two teams will factor into this discussion, Karen. I'm talking about the Montreal Canadiens. We spent a lot of time talking about what they haven't done recently. You know what they have done?
Win? What?
Multiple times in the past week and a half, when it was a push-comes-to-shove game, those are the games they've won. It happened in Montreal when the Flames went in, won the opening game of that two-game set, and on the Friday night, well, if Calgary wins this game, look at what the playoff race looks like, and all of a sudden it's on. Montreal wins. Got help from the post, but won the game. Got help from the post last night as well, but we'll get to that in just a minute. Last week in Edmonton, Montreal goes in, up 1-0, 10 minutes to go in the hockey game. Connor McDavid throws on the cape, picks up a goal and two assists. Oilers win 4-1 with the empty netter. Oh, boy. Montreal blew it. They really need this win. What are they going to do? They come out and they play big boy hockey on the Wednesday night. They win 4-3. Same situation last night. Two straight losses against the Flames. Yesterday afternoon, more accurately. Yesterday afternoon, they're on a two-game losing streak to Calgary. If Calgary wins, they're within 2 points. Only one game in hand for the Habs. Now it's really on. They find a way to win that game. They have not won a lot lately, but when it's a back-against-the-wall type of scenario, Montreal has found a way to get over in those games.
It seems like, Scott, it's almost like they're listening to us talk on this show. It seems like they're listening to the narrative of, uh-oh, how can Montreal blow this? And Calgary, they haven't done enough to put themselves, you know, too far ahead of Calgary, Vancouver. They're still mathematically involved in it. And remember, we were talking back before that game where they came back and won in Edmonton. I believe we were talking about the fact, like, what do you trust more? Toronto's goaltending or Montreal's ability to score goals? And I think I said, you know, Montreal's ability to score goals at that point because Toronto was going on a tailspin. And I thought, you know, Montreal's going to figure this out because they know what people are saying about them right now. They know they're saying they should be way far ahead of Calgary and Vancouver. They should be putting pucks in the net. They got to figure out a way to win games because they're the better teams than those two teams chasing them. And again, they came out and they had that game against Edmonton where they kind of put the doubters to rest. And then they come out with two straight losses against Calgary. Again, people are talking about Montreal. They're letting them hang around. How are they going to fall out of this, Scott? Can Calgary and Vancouver catch them? It seems as soon as that narrative goes, and this is what you're saying, but as soon as that narrative goes, okay, how can Montreal blow this? They go out there and go, okay, we're going to change the narrative for one game. Now, the key for Montreal is, and again, mathematically, it looks really good for them right now. I mean, we're not talking playoffs anymore for Vancouver and Calgary. The chance is still there, I suppose, but I'm done talking about it. I did it for one day yesterday. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm done. I'm off the bandwagon. Let's go Montreal. But the key for Montreal is, Scott, you need to see this game in and game out. It wasn't a pretty game last night, but they need to find a way to win games.
It's the one thing, if you're a Habs fan, you would cling to as far as the postseason goes. Yeah, they still got a little bit of work to do, but you're right about the math. It looks uglier in a hurry. It's that old three wins feels like one, one loss feels like three. Calgary, not mathematically eliminated last night. It sure felt like it. Same with Vancouver. Yep, five games in hand, 10 points back. That's a whole lot of winning that would have to occur. And neither team gave an inspired performance last night. Like, neither team was awful, but both games were terrible to watch, quite frankly. That was low event or no event hockey in both Calgary and Ottawa last night. It wasn't a lot of fun to consume from an entertainment standpoint. And probably the team, if you're listening to us in Calgary and Vancouver right now, probably the team you wanted to win didn't get over. It was dismal from those points of view. Maybe the most incredible thing to me was that a game the Flames had to have in the final 8 minutes, they didn't get a shot. It's 7:48 to be more specific. They got a power play with just over 8 minutes to go, and they managed a quick shot from Johnny Gaudreau, and then after that, no shots in the final 7:48. And I think Canucks fans related to that as well, watching that team last night going, okay, I know you haven't had your legs for a lot of this game, and Ottawa's clogging up the middle of the ice, but you're going to find a way to generate something, aren't you? And there were more than no shots, but they just weren't able to create any high-danger scoring opportunities.
Yeah, and what stood out to me, Scott, is the fact that even with the goalie pulled, I mean, Calgary just couldn't even generate something with about 220 they pulled Markstrom, I think, and they couldn't generate a shot on that. I mean, it has to be, at this point, desperation, and it's desperation for Calgary, it's desperation for Vancouver, and I just didn't see it from either team last night. I will admit that I did fall asleep in the second period of the Canucks game. I didn't go back. And I texted you this, and you're like, yeah, it was probably more exciting than what was actually on the television, me having to snooze. I went back and kind of breezed through it, but it was like, you know, Vancouver, I will give a pass. And I give a pass for a reason, because of the fact that, okay, you're coming off COVID, you get the two emotional boost wins against Toronto. We've seen this before. It happened exactly with the New Jersey Devils. At some point, that adrenaline's going to wear off. At some point, you know, not having played games, that's going to catch up to you with your legs. Okay, they're flying across country. It's that first game out east. You see this a lot when that happens. So again, I could maybe give Vancouver a pass in this. But with Calgary, I'm a little bit more disappointed, just because they were coming off two games where, yeah, it wasn't exactly the most exciting game, Scott, but they did what they had to do to win the game. And last night, there just wasn't that, okay, our season hangs in the balance in this third period. We need to do anything that we can to find the back of the net and tie this game up. I just didn't see it.
More urgency needed, didn't get it in Calgary. Maybe Vancouver finds some. Brandon Sutter, he was not taking the COVID. I'm not going to call it an excuse, the COVID rationale. Like, Brandon Sutter was one who stood up and said, yeah, you know, maybe last week we were catching up, but it's not that now. I think our team is past COVID being the thing. It's more the schedule now that's going to catch up with us, if anything. And I'm not suggesting you are putting words in their mouths. I think most people give them some sort of pass, but Brandon Sutter wasn't using that off-ramp last night after the game.
And he's not going to use it as a crutch, right? Now they're five games in post-COVID. Like, he's not going to use it as an excuse, and I completely understand that. He still thinks, you know, we have the ability to make the playoffs, and they're going to look one game at a time, so they're not going to use any sort of excuses. But I do think that, you know, it's, what, Tyler Motte's second game? I mean, it's... Well, Demko, he was injured. He's only played one game. Like, there's still guys that are trying to come back and find their legs. And I just think that, yeah, it's not an excuse, but it can be a reason. It still can be. You're just not going to use it as a crutch.
Brendan in Nanaimo says, not Tyler Motte, but a different Tyler is the guy who determined the fourth seed in the North. That would be Tyler Toffoli. Montreal would not be where they are without him. Also, the Canucks could possibly be where Montreal is with Toffoli. 25 goals he scored in four straight games. I said it last week, and I think some people snickered and went, okay, that's cool, but it's not going to happen. I said he could take a run at a career high. His career high in his career, makes sense, is 31 goals. He's at 25 right now. The way he's scoring and the way he scores in streaks, it's possible. I'm not going to say probable, but it is possible that Tyler Toffoli hits 30, maybe goes past 31 this year.
Well, right now he seems to be one of the consistent guys, Scott, that is scoring for Montreal. So I'd say that if they're going to go on this run here, and I feel they're going to clinch the fourth playoff spot in the next week or so. The season's almost over, but I feel Tyler Toffoli could hit 30. He could go on a heater. He's one of those players, like, it depends who he plays. He's not going to play Vancouver anymore, so he's not going to have that opportunity to show them up. But I do think that there is definitely the opportunity for him to get 30. This one comes from James from Richmond, Scott, who's now in Montreal. He says, hi, guys. The last 10 days or so was such a blast being a Canucks fan in Montreal. Walking around town with my Canucks jersey was a blast. I can't name all the dirty looks sent my way. Montreal hung in there, pulled it out. The city took a collective breath for the first time in a long time. And I think that's something that that game that Montreal fans needed last night. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Yeah, they beat Calgary. But at the same time, too, okay, it puts them now 6 points up on Calgary for that final playoff spot versus two, they can kind of say, okay, we're in the driver's seat now. We can kind of finally take a deep breath and just, I mean, they're going to back into the playoffs properly, but still, they're in the driver's seat. They can take a little bit of a breath.
All right, you can't name all the dirty looks sent your way, but can you name the player we are looking for, James? We will throw that out to all of you right now. Upper Deck Starter Kit giveaway. We're doing this every day this week, and we're giving away a prize in each market. One to the 960-960 inbox, one to 650-650. To qualify, you need to have the active player that we are looking for, and we're giving you clues along the way. Look, if you win this, it's fantastic. Bring back all that nostalgia around trading cards. You and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, Karen. You get a trading card binder that holds up to 252 cards, an exclusive Sophomore Sensations card, 3 packs of Upper Deck Series 1 cards from this current season, a poster, a trading card, collector's guide. We gave you the first clue last hour. Mm-hmm. This player, who is active in the NHL right now, he's a former 40-goal scorer in the Western Hockey League. What is clue number two?
He has played professional hockey in Europe. Ooh.
Little twist thrown in there. He's played professional hockey in Europe.
Now, for me, I know the answer because I know who the player is.
I'm glad
we came up with this together. So, actually, I think I was the one who threw it out there. You came up with the clues. But even this one threw me for a little bit. I was like thinking to myself, he did. I remember now. But yes, there's the clue. He played professional hockey in Europe.
Text in 650-659-6960. Jamie will randomly draw two winners, one from the Calgary inbox, one from the Vancouver inbox, before the end of the show, and we will give you more clues, one per hour. Let's get to what they're saying.
What are you talking about, man?
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
Scored again yesterday. That means he probably doesn't play for Calgary or Vancouver. He used to play for one of those two teams. He is Sam Bennett, now wearing number 9 with the Florida Panthers, and he scored his 8th goal of the season. You may have heard this, Karen. Things are going pretty well for him since he arrived in Florida via the trade deadline.
Yeah, he appears to be a sniper now. He's got 5 goals in his last 6 games that he's played so far, whatever it is. He is, he's that sniper that Calgary Flames would have liked to have. But the thing with Sam Bennett is, Scott, you watch him out there, he's having fun playing hockey, and he's enjoying it. And he said that much. He said, I'm having a really good time playing hockey right now.
He was on the
Chirp. Playing in Florida.
Yeah, he was on the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard. You can listen to that. We love having Darren on this show. He's doing a great job with that podcast. Sam was the NHL player he had on. And Sam Bennett said a bunch of things. He talked about how he's going to the beach every day and how exciting that is because he hadn't been to the beach in like 2 years. He also talked about the hockey. And Millard asked him about all of the minutes he's getting. He's playing on that line right now with Huberdeau and Duclair. And here's what Bennett had to say about all of the minutes he's getting from Joel Quenneville.
It's a feeling I haven't had in a long time where, it feels like the team and the coaching staff believe in me and they trust me and to have that support and that belief, I think that helps me and my confidence, my game. So I'm loving every minute of it.
Is there a bit of vindication in playing those many minutes and having the success that you've had in the short term there?
Yeah, for sure. I think I've always known that that I want to take on a bigger role and I want to play a bigger role. And, you know, now that, I'm getting that opportunity and, you know, I feel like I've been taking advantage of it a little bit. I think, you know, it just proves that, I could have been doing this all along. And, you know, I'm happy. I'm not going to get comfortable. I'm not going to get complacent. I know it's only been a couple games, so I still got a lot more to prove and a lot more to give. So I'm just going to keep going out there and playing my game every chance I get.
So two things that stuck out to me, Scott, and I think they're probably the same one that stuck out to you. Feels like the team and coaching staff believe in me and trust me. To have that support and belief helps me in my confidence and my game. Also, I've always known to take on a bigger role. Now that I'm getting the opportunity, I feel like I'm taking advantage of it. Proves that I could have been doing this all along.
Yeah, that second one. It's the second part of that that jumps out to me. It's the second part more than anything. Because I listened to the entire interview. So the coaching thing is definitely not a shot at Daryl Sutter. It is a shot at what happened under Bill Peters and Jeff Ward. Absolutely it is. But it's the second part. Feel like I could have been doing this. Proves I could have been doing this the whole time. Now, some of that's on the player. You can't control who the coach is. You can only control how you play. You don't get to dole out the ice time that you want, but you can prove that you deserve more. And if you play more consistently, you get more. So some of this is on the player as well. But yeah, that's the part that grabs you.
And it's funny, Scott, remember, go back to that, the day that he got traded and the interview on 960 with assistant GM Craig Conroy. And he said, when Sam Bennett plays in the playoffs, he's great. He's a different player. But then he come into every training camp and have mentally in his head, he's fourth line Sam Bennett. So that is more on the player in terms of confidence level. Like if he's coming in and thinking, okay, well, I played well in the playoffs, but they're just going to put me back on the fourth line. So, okay, this is all I am. So again, he could have had a little bit the wrong mentality when it was in Calgary. What I like about what he's doing right now is he really did take advantage of a fresh lease on life. Like he went down there and he did say in the interview too, like he said, oh my goodness, I was instantly excited because of the fact we're in playoffs. Like we're going to go to the playoffs and I'm going to get to play in the playoffs. And we all know what Sam Bennett playoff hockey is like. So I like the fact he isn't taking advantage of it, but I do think that it's been six games and Coach Quenneville, if his play stops, you know, starts slipping a little bit, Coach Scoot is going to let him know. And he's going to find himself riding the pine.
We didn't play it for you there, but the other thing that sticks out in the interview to me, and there's a bunch, you can go listen to it. As I mentioned, Darren does a wonderful job with that podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. He said that Daryl Sutter, after the trade, came up to him and said, I wish I would have had you longer. And I know Joel Quenneville. And I know Joel Quenneville. And I'm going to give him a call. And Bennett said he believes that Sutter called Quenneville, told him about him before he even arrived. So the player was moving on, but Daryl Sutter wanted the best for him in his new situation. To the National Football League, the head coach that I pay the most attention to, everyone in the football world was paying the most attention to yesterday. Kyle Shanahan has not made a point pre-draft of getting involved with the team's pre-draft press conference. He did so yesterday, and there was a lot that came out of it. The Niners moved up to draft at number 3. We all know it's going to be a quarterback. Here's part of what people were talking about yesterday after Kyle Shanahan's press conference. Did you know which quarterback you wanted when you decided to make the move up the board?
You know, when we made this decision, we knew that there were five guys that we felt that we'd be okay with taking. You know, we knew that there was three at the time exactly. That's why we thought three was a good spot to go to. After going through this whole process, I feel good about five guys at three. Yeah, we had a guy probably at first back then, but we knew that wasn't set in stone. And we knew the only way we could figure out a little bit more, especially when you can't work out guys, you can't meet with these people. There's a lot of things you can't do this year. The only way we could go off that is if we got closer to where we could do a little more in-depth thing that we didn't have to hide. And we did. And in that time, I think every candidate's gotten stronger. And yeah, we probably started with one in mind, but that one's gotten better since, and so have all the other candidates. So do we know exactly who we want? Maybe, probably, but maybe not. I don't feel like we need to say that. And that's not just for our case, but like, you know, lots of stuff happens between now and the draft, and you don't want the whole league knowing exactly what you're set on 4 days before the draft. And we also care about a lot of people that have been involved in this. I mean, we got to know a lot of people and stuff. And those are the type of questions like narrowing it down or who's been eliminated or things like that, that one, I don't know if I want the league to know. I don't think it necessarily helps. And that's why we really, no one's really going to know whether we know or not till we pick. And that's kind of what we're comfortable keeping it at.
Scott, can I just say, Kyle Shanahan knows exactly who he's picking at number three.
And of course.
I feel it's exactly the person that he traded up to get.
Of course.
That's exactly it. Unless there's some weird thing that happens with the Jets at number two. But we do have a feeling we know who's going 1-2. He knew exactly who he was taking. Kyle Shanahan, you can talk your way around it all you want. And you're trying to just to give a longer answer and be nice to people because you have talked to different people. But you knew from day one, and that is exactly the person that's going to go off the board on Thursday.
So there's a bunch that came out. Yesterday he had this clip in the press conference when they asked, is Jimmy Garoppolo going to be on your roster come Sunday? His answer was, I don't know if anyone is going to be alive on Sunday. Like, I don't know if anyone on earth is going to be alive. And people went, what kind of clip is that? He said, I don't know if anyone's going to be alive on this planet come Sunday. So I don't know who's going to be on our roster come Sunday. He talked multiple times in the press conference yesterday about saying we moved up because we knew we could get a starting quarterback there. And there are multiple players there that we believe are starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So when you have a chance to move up and get your starting quarterback, you do it, which tells you everything about Jimmy Garoppolo's future with the organization. The other theory that most are working off right now, and this as a Niners fan myself, is something I'm going to have to get past. Many people who said, they're going to be very secretive, have changed their minds. They think that Kyle Shanahan did that press conference yesterday as getting in front of all of the criticism that has already been thrown at Mac Jones. So that if they draft Mac Jones, number three overall on Thursday, that he's already not a wanted man in San Francisco. That it was proactive in that regard. There are a lot of people writing that story today, Karen.
I think we're grasping at straws when it comes to, because we've been doing so many stories leading up to this draft. It feels like it's taken months, so we're just grasping now. I mean, there was the report yesterday from Ian Rappaport that says, oh, okay, San Fran is now leaning towards Mac Jones or Trey Lance when, you know, last week it was Justin Fields that we were all talking about that was going to go to San Fran. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things we're just trying to read things into what he is saying, and that's what we're supposed to do. We're in the media. We're supposed to kind of see if there's underlying messaging in terms of what he's saying. But, Scott, he can say that all he wants.
Here's the dots
Mac
people
Jones
are connecting.
Or Justin.
I'll tell you the dots people are connecting, Karen. He talked about the quarterback they get being their starting quarterback, and there are people who believe that Justin Fields, Trey Lance, either of them's going to take a little longer. That Mac Jones, if he's going to hit, he's a guy that could play right away. And there are a lot of reasons to think that he's not going to be great in the NFL, but the people who think that Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers like him think that it's because he can come right out of college, that he's accurate enough, and he can make the reads that Kyle Shanahan gives him. Here are the 1, 2, 3 guys in the order they're going to be open. You hit one of them. That's why people think that they're going Mac Jones, and he wanted to get in front of it from a PR standpoint. That's the theory.
But aren't they going to develop him no matter what? I know he was asked the question on Jimmy Garoppolo, and he basically went Aristotle on us and saying that, you know, well, philosopher, well, we might not be alive all on Thursday or next season, so who knows? But, I mean, if I am a betting person, Jimmy Garoppolo is a starting quarterback next year, and any quarterback that you draft, you are going to draft as a year sitting, learning the system, and then step in. I will suggest that the one thing that we do know about Jimmy Garoppolo that has been an issue with him has been staying healthy. So if Kyle Shanahan is looking at someone that's more ready in the now, it may have to be someone, Scott, whether or not he's actually the backup or not, that steps in next season's for a couple of games. Because Garoppolo has shown that, you know, he generally doesn't play a whole season. So it could be a little bit more matter-of-fact that way. I still think, though, that when it comes to what Kyle Shanahan is talking about now, he's just trying to get our heads to spin, and he's going to pick who he's going to pick on Thursday. And that pick has been in as soon as we saw that trade about a month ago up to get that draft pick from Miami.
I will believe it's Mac Jones when I see Mac Jones in a 49ers uniform or Trey Lance or Justin Fields. We'll see. Yesterday's the closest I've been to thinking they're actually going to draft Mac Jones.
And that comes from,
I'm going to have to get to a place where, if that's what they do, Karen, as a fan, clean slate. Like, let the guy play, whoever it is. Let the guy play and see, because I will tell you this, from the amount of people who are down on Mac Jones for all of their different reasons, it will be received by a lot of 49ers fans as Donovan McNabb was received by Philadelphia Eagles fans. Like, booed? That pick was booed. That pick was roundly booed, and there were a lot of people who had to walk it back later. And whether it's Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson, Mac Jones go down the list, it doesn't matter until they actually play. There's a lot of people who've been celebrated as great top picks, and then the next thing you know, they're out of the league. Like, all that matters is whether or not it's the right pick 5 years, 10 years from now.
Yeah, and hey, Mac Jones was great in college. He absolutely was. He played in a system in Alabama. They had a ton of talent around him, and he didn't need to do a whole heck of a lot on his own, Scott. He was just that. That team itself was just that talented. He won a national championship. We have seen the fact that starting quarterbacks out of Alabama over the last couple of years have transitioned into starting quarterbacks in the NFL, unlike in years past, so maybe he can, but I'm still thinking that it's going to be Justin Fields that we're going to see on pick number three on Thursday. I'm going with that. I think it's Justin Fields.
Well, maybe you'll lay some money. They're putting odds out for that sort of thing. It's Rintoul. It's Sermon. You can get your texts in 960, 960, 650, 650. We want to get back into the conversation about the most exciting athlete in team sports. Is it Connor McDavid for you? Is it someone else, maybe from the National Football League? Hit us up. We'll ask Arash Madani next right here on Rintoul and Sermon.
Shotgun. Murray out of the pocket. 7 seconds. 6 seconds. Murray heaves it downfield. It is. Oh, it's caught. It is caught. DeAndre Hopkins. Miraculous. It's Murray magic.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
There's a case to be made for Kyler Murray.
There is, yeah.
I don't know if that's the case you're going to make just after the top of the next hour, Karen. We're going to ask our listeners to make their case as well. Some of them have been at 960, 960, or 650, 650. Who's the most exciting athlete in all of team sports?
You know, Kyler Murray's up there in terms of must-watch game in, game out, Scott. Not sure what he's going to do every game. What for me, what makes it exciting, Scott, and it's probably his stature, has a little bit to do with how exciting he is, because he looks like the little roadrunner out there. Like, when he takes off running, have you noticed how quickly his legs look like they're moving?
Yes.
Like, they literally look like they're moving faster than anything else you've ever seen. And again, it's probably because they're so short, and he is actually moving them really fast. But it's one of those things where you watch him play and you think, how is he doing what he's doing because of his size? And I think that's what makes him an exciting player. Is he the most exciting player in team sport? Well, you'll have to wait till 11 o'clock, listeners, to see what I think about that. But I do find him very intriguing when I watch him.
Well, a couple of the names that will come up if you're surveying the NFL and going, okay, what's my short list from this sport? What's my short list from that sport? Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray have to be in the conversation. They go about it in a different way. Like, Lamar is explosive and reaches this speed that very few athletes we've watched the quarterback position have ever gotten to. And that's why the comparison with Michael Vick gets made when he's in the open field and he's running and he makes guys look like statues. Kyler Murray does it with quickness, and he does it laterally, and it's all that quick stepping. Like, Lamar isn't taking as many steps, but man, there's power behind those steps. And that's where it's all in the eye of the beholder here. Who's the most exciting athlete in team sports to you? We're getting a lot of people in here making their submissions, and not all of them are for Connor McDavid. There are a bunch saying that, and that was the springboard for this conversation, because I do think he has to be in it, and there are a lot of people who are going to put him at the top of the list, Karen. There are others making cases for people in hockey, though. Like Tom in Medicine Hat says, Krill the Thrill, or Dollar Krill, depending on which nickname you want to use for Krill Kaprizov. Tom says, I've watched over half the Wild games. Not a period goes by that I didn't say, wow, I am addicted. How much of his excitement is a newness and a freshness? We often have that with younger players coming into the game. McDavid's been doing it for a few years. This has been one of those years, I think, that we've revisited the conversation about maybe overlooking some of McDavid's exploits or not giving them enough attention in other years because we've become used to it.
And that's the thing. It's almost like you kind of think it's just ho-hum with him, Scott, when it comes to exciting, but I would suggest that you do see something on a night where it just reminds you how exciting and explosive he is. Like when you watched him on that breakaway last night and the first two steps that he has, like his first two strides to give separation from the defender, it's just, it's absolutely incredible to see his speed. And Mike McKenna talked about it too, when he came in on Hellebuck on that breakaway, just his hands in close to, you know, make a couple of stick moves and get past Connor Hellebuck. So, I mean, for me, it's pretty obvious. I think Connor McDavid is by far and away the most exciting player in hockey, but this one comes in and it's for Nathan MacKinnon. And it says, McDavid has a far superior skill set for MacKinnon, better shot vision, better passing. But when I see MacKinnon grab the puck behind the net on his own, all he is thinking about is putting the puck into the other net. Complete tunnel vision at the puck, at putting the puck in the net. And when MacKinnon scores after a minute and a half shift, he gets pissed when he has to come off the ice. All he wants to do is score. His raw, passionate, and intense. And he has something McDavid never will have. A mean underhand helmet fastball. That's from Red Light Ryan in Calgary. MacKinnon has the skills and the tools. Like, he is absolutely phenomenal to watch night in, night out. I would just suggest, and maybe it's because lack of visibility right now, Scott, and the fact that we're just seeing most of the Canadian division teams, but I would say there is a bias when it comes to McDavid over MacKinnon.
Yep, right now there is, and if we had this conversation a year or two ago, it might have swung the other way, or at least closer to 50% for many of you. And of course, this is not limited to hockey, which is why we bring Arash Madani of Sportsnet into the conversation. Arash, thank you very much for doing this today. How are you?
I'm doing well, Scotty. What's happening over there?
Lots, man. Lots is happening.
Lots is a good thing.
Yeah, lots is a good thing, especially when you're doing a four-hour talk show every single day, as you can as you can understand. And with what McDavid did last night in the National Hockey League, with how exciting he is, it caused us to have this conversation about most exciting athlete in team sports. And there are so many to consider. Everybody's definition of excitement's a little bit different, Arash. Who for you is at the top of that list?
There's two. One is still Steph Curry. Steph, to me, is not just a human video game. He's a human cheat code. I thought Steve Kerr kind of captured him best, where he said, you know, as a coach, you're watching Steph play. He's about to pull up from somewhere between midcourt and the three-point line. You're like, no, yes. That's Steph. I mean, at any time, he can ignite. He can get going. And when he kind of gets into a rhythm, when he's feeling it, watch out. And the other guys is just Mahomes. I know it's easy. I know it's a lazy answer, but my God, he does stuff on the football field. Like in the Super Bowl, he's, you know, suspended in midair, sideways, throwing sidearm, and getting the ball into the end zone from 35 yards out. And you're saying to yourself, what the hell am I looking at right now?
Yeah, those two guys are certainly on the short list for their sports and in this conversation in general. And it's interesting because some people have gone the more explosive route, Arash. And in that conversation, like you go to basketball and you're going to want to talk about guys like Zion. Maybe you're going to want to talk about guys in football like Lamar Jackson, or even running backs factor into this. Guys like Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey. Explosiveness is a component of this, but it's not necessarily the deciding factor for everyone, including you.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you like explosiveness, I just spent the last couple of days working on some NFL draft stuff. Went in the film room with Jordan Palmer, who's worked this winter with Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Kyle Pitts. Now, Kyle Pitts wears number 84 for the Florida Gators. He is Megatron 2.0. They've listed him as a tight end, Scotty. He can play X receiver. He's going to command a double team everywhere he goes. And this guy will run over people while being able to high point the ball and climb the ladder. So if you're watching on Thursday night, or if you're a fan of the NFL, I don't know if he's going to go 4 to the Falcons. I don't know if he's going to go 6 to Houston when the Texans trade Deshaun Watson to Miami and get that 6th overall pick. I don't know where Pitts is going to go, but he is going to be the most explosive player in football next season.
Next season? You think he will be the most explosive player in football next season?
Yes, I really do. I really do. I mean, he's playing against men right now in the SEC. And I don't know what corner and or safety will be able to cover 6'6", 254.
It's a good point, and I've seen the tape as well. He looks like a really good one, and there have been a lot of much hype tight ends come out in recent years that haven't quite lived up to the athleticism.
But I don't think he's a tight end.
Well, Scotty, like, and that's fine.
If I'm an NFL coach, this guy, I'm like, I'm not going to teach you how to block. I don't need you to block. I didn't draft you to block. I drafted you to draw a double team and make the catch that nobody else can. So I put him as an X receiver.
Okay, so do you consider him more explosive than DK Metcalf?
No. But so, then you just ruined my argument.
Okay, well, this is what I'm saying. Like it's a deep field when you talk explosiveness in that sport.
Yeah, but who else? Who else? I forgot about DK, to be quite honest.
One, again, it's in a different way. It's a smoothness about his game, but Alvin Kamara is in the conversation for explosive. Yeah. McCaffrey. Lamar Jackson has to be in the explosive conversation, doesn't he, Arash?
Yeah, except Lamar's not going to, like, run through you and then stare over your kind of, you know, crumpled body on the field. Pitts can do that. DK can do that. That's why DK is so impressive, is that he's just such a physically imposing presence on top of the fact that he has the shoot out of the cannon speed. And that, those are the ones that are so rare to find. Look, Kamara in space is a joy to watch. I mean, he's got a combination of ice dancing and speed skating all at once, and he can catch the football for you. So that's a joy. That's watching Picasso. These guys, Metcalf and Pitts, they're an F1 driver, and they're just going to go through the wall and not think twice about it.
Hey, Arash, I was going to switch to baseball now because, hi, how are you?
Well,
it's been a long time.
Yes.
What we saw from Shohei Ohtani last night, He struck out a season-high 9 batters over 5 innings. He got the win at the plate, 2-for-3 with the walk, 2 runs batted in, and 3 runs scored.
And he's a human, right?
He's a human, yeah. And he wants to go back out there and hit again today, I believe is what he said. When you look at him and what he brings to the diamond, I don't know if he's the most exciting player in baseball because of just maybe just because of how quiet he is on the field, but is there a way that baseball can kind of put him up there in one of those draws where they can enhance what he has and bring more people to baseball?
Yeah, they can, Karen. I believe this, is that baseball needs to completely change what it's doing. I think there need to be shorter games. I think it needs to be a shorter season. I think you have to provide so much more value to a quality at-bat. Look, gambling's about to explode. Fantasy is already exploding. To me, if you have a 10-pitch at-bat, and even if you strike out, there's got to be a value there from a fantasy standpoint and from a baseball standpoint to reward that. If Shohei Ohtani is going to strike out, punch out 9 hitters, go 2-for-3, and hit the next day, like, that's incredible. I guess, though, guys, you know, in a meme world, in a social media world, we still get out of our seats for Fernando Tatis Jr. because of how mm-hmm. loud he is. We like the sizzle more than the steak, it seems. You know, everybody loved Barry Sanders. He got in the end zone. He just handed the football off to the referee and went home. You know, act like you've been there before. Act like you've been there before doesn't seem to move the needle as much. So how do you try and make that happen? I think the only way you can make that happen is by objectively making that stat and those stats matter more, so that if somebody is wagering on it or if somebody is involved in some kind of fantasy aspect or daily fantasy aspect, they're rewarded more for it. Otherwise, we just all love the bat flip. We love Tatis mocking Bauer. That's what's getting us excited about what we're watching.
And it's funny to me, too, that the fact that Shohei Ohtani just happens to play in for the Angels, who have one of the most special baseball players ever to grace us in Mike Trout, and yet again, It's the Rod Manfred saying, like, I wish he had more personality. It just strikes me as kind of, like, ironic that these two players who are kind of doing it their own way, but they're extremely talented, and it's just, again, they just go about it and do their stuff. Like, this is what we are. There's no personality involved with it, really.
So, like, there's the three most boring superstars in sports. Two of them were last night with McDavid and Ohtani. And then the third most boring player in sports is Ohtani's teammate, Mike Trout. And if there was more of a personality, if they, quote, let the boys play, if they were, but you want to be authentic too. And I just don't know if that is in Trout's makeup. I've been around the Angels a little bit. I've interviewed Trout. I've talked to people around Trout. They just say, hey, that's just Mike. That's just his personality. So you can't turn somebody into somebody they're not. And at the same time, those around Tatis say, this is who he is too. It's funny, you know, I think Blue Jay fans have kind of gravitated toward Vlad Guerrero a lot because he seems to be having a blast out there and he's enjoying himself. He doesn't take it, you know, old school thinking over the top, but he still seems to be having a ball doing what he's doing out there too.
But it's also the reason that so many Blue Jays fans gravitated to Bo Bichette right away. And back in the day, though, he didn't turn into what they thought he was going to, Brett Laurie, because it's the adrenaline that comes with those players and the excitement that comes with those players that causes them to be so charismatic and people want to gravitate to that, Arash.
I agree. And Stroman, too. Let's just do one big generalization while we're having this conversation. The issue is you have old white men running these leagues who are completely out of touch with what is going on in the world out there for your consumers. And I've had conversations with GMs in sports before. I said, do you know what business you're in? And they kind of look at me like I'm the idiot. And they said, what are you talking about? I said, what is your job? And they said, to win games. And I said, no, it's not. You're in the entertainment business. Your job is to put people in the seats, and your job is to make people want to consume your product. Because if baseball doesn't do something about it very soon, they're about to think back a couple of generations ago, the two biggest sports, I just finished reading a book on Muhammad Ali. The two biggest sports at the time when Ali was at his peak were horse racing and boxing. And baseball was in that conversation too. There are so many other ways now for people to entertain themselves than a generation or two ago. And what sports executives have to understand, be it, you know, if you're in the baseball ops, football ops, hockey ops side, or on the business side of those operations, is that beyond anything else, you are an entertainment business first, where you have to make sure people are consuming your product. Because if you don't, there is no product anymore.
Arash, you talked about one player, you said puts people in seats in the entertainment business. One player that I think Blue Jays fans and Blue Jays management hope does that is George Springer. I think we're going to see him tonight, if I'm not mistaken, Arash, making his debut. When we do get to see him, what effect do you think he'll have on this Jays lineup?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen today or tomorrow, Karen, or even this week or
really? Next.
Yeah, it's as crazy as this is, it's not Folgers. It's instant, just add George and wins will come. Matter of fact, honestly, guys, I think Springer's going to struggle the first couple of weeks of the season for a couple of reasons. One, I don't really value spring training at-bats. He hasn't taken a real at-bat since October of last year, and now we're coming up on May. So it's been a minute. Two, as we've seen in every pro sport with every free agent when they change teams, they go into a new market and they try to do too much right away and want to show management, fans, the industry that they're in. But when things settle down, what Springer will provide them is a table setter at the top of the lineup. They haven't had a real leadoff hitter. No disrespect to Ben Revere for his 2 months in 2015. But they haven't had a real leadoff hitter since Ricky Henderson in 1993. That's how long it's been. So they're going to have themselves a legit leadoff hitter. They're going to have themselves a World Series MVP. They're going to have themselves a 31-year-old who's been there and done that and who's actually approachable in the locker room and wants to be a leader. You're going to have somebody who's going to settle things down up the middle defensively because his glove is very solid in center field. And somebody who said when when he first arrived with the Jays, he said, it's my job to earn the respect of the guys in the locker room. It's about listening to everybody else and making myself fit in rather than commanding and demanding that right away. So I guess, Karen, the long answer to your question is they're going to get a pro. They're going to get somebody who's accomplished, and they're going to get somebody who's going to set a tone in the room and at the top of the lineup every night. And I guess what we learned is the cost of that is $150 million. It's not a cheap little commodity to have.
Arash, great stuff, man. Excellent perspective that you brought to the conversation today. As always, really appreciate you making the time, and we will do this again soon. Stay safe. Stay well.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
That is Arash Madani joining us here today, talking about who he thinks the most exciting player is in team sports, talking some baseball there at the end.
Hey, Scott, I just want to point out, when I said, oh, really, I totally thought he was going, that George Springer's not making his debut today or tomorrow. So if you heard the disappointment in my life, in my voice, it wasn't because of the fact that, okay, I don't expect him to come in and, you know, go 4 for 5 with a walk and score 2 runs and have the immediate effect. I was like, really? I got to wait a couple more days for this to happen. He's not playing tonight. So that's where I was with that. So if the, oh, really? I just want to, like, make you know, in the listeners know, I should have said it to Rash, because I'm like, yeah, it makes sense he's not going to come in and, like, immediately make a huge impact, but I was really disappointed at the thought of not seeing him tonight.
Well, it's been a long time, and when you pay the most you've ever paid for a free agent in franchise history, you want to see your shiny new toy right away, and Blue Jays fans have had to wait for that. Not an easy debut against Max Scherzer.
Right?
That guy can deal a little bit. He can deal a little bit.
Only won a couple Cy Youngs.
I knew this would happen. I've seen it online already, but it's that Spider-Man meme of the two Spider-Mans pointing at each other, like, you're the same as me. It happened again just now. It does play into our conversation of the day, the most exciting player in team sports. I will explain how next on Rintoul and Sermon.